Join us for the Sharks NHL Draft Party on June 28th at 3 p.m. Witness the Sharks select number one overall for the first time in franchise history and celebrate the team's future with fellow Sharks fans. Don't miss out on experiencing this historic event with an electrifying atmosphere at SAP Center by securing your tickets today at sjsharks.com/thefutureisteal. That's sjsharks.com/thefutureisteal.
Welcome to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Here are Dan Rusinowski and Drew Remenda.
Episode 6 of our Stanley Cup Playoff Report is filled with controversy and intensity, Drew. It's amazing how it ratchets up every game.
Wow, we've seen it. We've lived it without a doubt, Danny, as the playoffs, and we're only in the second round, as the playoffs increase in importance, as the games are getting more and more intense, more controversy, more penalties, more comments from the league, more comments from the teams, and guys just don't like each other out there when they're going against each other in a 7-game series.
Well, you want some proof? Let's go right to Florida and Boston. The Bruins down 3-1 to the Florida Panthers after game number 4. Florida just cruises up to Boston and takes control of the series. And here is how it kind of started.
Here's Barkov. McAvoy stepped up and he just pasted Reinhardt.
All right, buckle your seatbelts.
Now, that was Boston on the call, of course. McAvoy with the hit on Reinhardt, who, by the way, Sam Reinhardt ended leaving that game in the third period. More on that a little bit later. But also, the young goaltender named Swayman had to make a couple of saves early, too.
Tarasenko walks into the slot, backhand, and Swayman is stopped. He stuck out the left foot.
Not easy to stop Vladimir Tarasenko, who's got that great shot. And, of course, David Pastrnak is hard to stop, too.
McAvoy cranked it down to the far corner. Van Riemsdyk drives it right corner to Brusk. He scores! Pastrnak! In the right circle, teed one up and buried one low to the far side of Bobrovsky. A power play goal. Bruins 1, Panthers nothing.
And then Brandon Carlo made it 2-0.
Far side, Lundell nearly coughed it up. He does. Carlo shoots. He scores! Brandon Carlo with a wrister from the blue line. Bruins 2, Panthers nothing.
Well, that was quite an exciting moment there for Boston fans. 2-0 Bruins. Tough moment for Anton Lundell, but he came right back and atoned for it.
Deck left. He'll play it in. Anton Lundell, far corner, down behind the net for Evan Rodriguez. Lundell, a shot, and he scores! Anton Lundell let it rip from the left circle, and the Panthers are on the board. They cut the Boston lead to 1 with 5:09 to go here in the second.
Real nice goal. That was Doug Plagans on Florida Radio, and after the game, Lundell talked about how important it was to him.
The first goal was obviously huge for our team, and we had some good chances early in the game, but you know, it's hard to score in playoffs, but we just stick with it and got some more chances and finally went in and we got a head start to our game and were able to show the way. So that was good by our line.
Nice to see, Drew, that guys can atone for something that they did wrong right away, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I remember Dean Lombardi, former general manager of the Sharks, used to talk about that all the time. The key to a good hockey player is the guy who, in a game that's filled with mistakes, that if he makes a mistake that costs his team, that he's able to sometime in that game bounce right back and do something to benefit his team. That's the sign of a guy who's got resilience and a guy who's got character and a guy who's a good player.
Well, with the game, it started with a McAvoy hit on Reinhardt and the intensity just ratcheted up. The Bruins with a 2-0 lead. Lundell makes it 2-1. Then we have time for the most interesting part of the game.
Out to the line, Ekman-Larsson, touch pass, Tarasenko, big try, blocked out front by Peake, it's loose, Bennett in close, and they score, and it's Sam Bennett tying the game, 2-2, 16-19 left in the third, a power play goal for Sam Bennett with 2 seconds left in the man advantage.
But hold on, folks, not so simple as Sam Bennett, who is public enemy number one in Boston,
sir,
in all of the headlines because of what he did to Brad Marchand, knocking him out. And by the way, Marchand not able to play in game number 5 on Tuesday night here. That's a big, big loss for the Bruins. But in this case, gave a little bit of a push, shall we say, to Charlie Coyle. Coyle bumps into the goaltender Swayman, and they review it, they look at it, and they say that it is a good goal after the game. Head coach Jim Montgomery talked about the reasoning for going for it.
We thought that Coyle was on top of our goaltender. And if Coyle was able to stand his ground, he could have cleared the puck. That inhibited our goaltender from being able to react to play in the puck.
Well, it seems kind of standard. And here's what Montgomery said the officials told him.
Toronto ruled that it was a good goal, that the play didn't interfere with the goal. That's the explanation I got.
Charlie Coyle gave us the explanation of what he saw on the ice.
It's in the crease, play, trying to make a play, and goes through me, feel a push from behind. I go down and sway, and puck trickles past and right to their guy, empty net. Figured I could probably turn around and make a play on it or clear it. And that's what happened. It's a tough call. Sometimes you got to play through things and can't make excuses, right? So no matter what it is, plays during the game, down in series, we keep playing. We come back and, we get it the next time.
Pretty solid diplomatic answer from Charlie Coyle from the Bruins' point of view. And now let's have the fun part begin with Paul Maurice on the other side of the ice talking about what Florida saw.
And the play just gets finished more than anything else. And that's in the situation book and it's in the real book. So the only way that I was particularly concerned is like some of your foreheads right now. It's the people in the media doing that to me. Like, you cannot believe it. You know, I caught you with the full forehead. That's where it came from. You were. What's that?
Your interpretation is interesting because, I mean, it, according to what Swayman says in their locker room, he was
Let's go with him. We're good. We're in Boston. Stay with the Bruins, brother. I'm with you.
I'm from Brooklyn, man. I ain't from Boston.
But, Paul, could you also speak to just Bennett's impact on the series? I mean, you know, obviously emotions were high. He played a heck of a game, kept it composed tonight, and obviously he's become a...
There's been lots of energy with this, lots of coverage. And I think you've got lost your minds on it, which is fine. You have that right. We've been a very disciplined, very composed team. We have. Fortunately, it's been a good way. It's gone unnoticed. We're all right with that.
You got to love Paul Maurice.
Fantastic. First, he's fantastic. Yeah, that was with Greg Wyshynski. With ESPN now, he had that forehead comment. I love Paul. You and I both do. He said something interesting there. It's in the rule book and it's also in the situation book. He's not quite accurate there. In the rule book, it states, I think it's 69-1 or 69-2, that if an attacking player makes contact with a defending player that causes the defending player to make contact with his goaltender, then that goal shall be disallowed and the penalty, there can be a penalty assessed to the attacking player. That's, I think I've got it pretty much verbatim. But he also said the situation room or the situation book. What was ruled was the NHL. Now, I always thought that the referees went to the video and then they were talking to Toronto at the same time, Toronto and the referees having a conversation. But then the referees make the decision based on what they've seen and what they're seeing to make the decision on the video replay. But you heard Jim Montgomery say Toronto deemed that Swayman was not inhibited from trying to make the save, which I would like someone from the situation room to show us that video during the offseason and tell me how Swayman was not inhibited from making that save. I think that was a blown call by the situation room.
What they said, Drew, was basically that he couldn't have gotten there. But that's, how do you interpret that? That's the whole point.
Exactly.
Now, so, here's an interesting kind of wrinkle to this. Had there been a delayed penalty or a penalty on the call against Bennett, that pushing Coyle, if they had a penalty against him, they could say no goal because... Right. The penalty was going to be called and he touched the puck and then they could have reviewed it and taken a look at it. And it might've been a different result. I'm wondering if it would have been.
No, I think it would have. It was definitely a cross check in the back. It definitely knocked him into Swayman and benefited from it. But I love Paul Maurice's back and forth with Greg Wyshynski. I love that coach. I love how positive and how even keel he is. I think it's a bad break for Boston. But as Charlie Coyle said, sometimes you get those calls, sometimes you don't. You have to just move forward. You can't stay with that call. It's over. It's done with. Now you're down 3-1. You got to start stepping on the gas and get moving forward. I think Charlie Coyle's answer was the best out of any of us.
I agree with you 100%. And of course, in the next 24 hours, as they travel back to Florida, seems like the Bruins media demanded to talk to Don Sweeney, the general manager of the Boston Bruins. Rather unusual to have this sort of come out with the officiating involved in the playoffs. But here is what Don Sweeney said to the media.
We're not in a position to be criticizing, you know, the officials and league-wide such. That's, you know, standard protocol. We'll get fined as a result of that. So there's no intention of my point to be critical. The overall premise that I have is, to be perfectly honest with you, we should not be asking the coach after a game what they feel about officiating and what happens. You guys should really be focused on, you know, what we didn't do well enough in the course of the game, win a hockey game. Those questions should be directed at either director or supervisor officials, supervisor series, and or the officials. You want full access, you know, and transparency, then put the officials in front of the microphone to answer the question, because they're the only ones, hold on, they're the only ones that have the experience to be able to handle, you know, whatever interpretation they applied to Rule 69 in that case to answer your question. That's it. So the rest of us, we have, you know, clearly we challenged it because of our interpretation, right?
Yeah.
So the only ones that can answer that, don't put out a statement, just stand in front and answer the question. That's as simple as that.
Well, Don Sweeney, basically turning it back to the NHL on that one. And I think that maybe that hell would freeze over before that'll happen, my own opinion.
I agree 100% with you, and I agree 100% with Don Sweeney. If we want to take that guesswork and the controversy out of it, then referees or supervisor officials should have to answer the questions. But here's what happens, and this is my issue with video replay in general. You're just trading one controversy for another. If we don't have video replay, and you supposedly want to, quote, get the call right, unquote, and when you supposedly think you got the call right from the Situation Room in Toronto and the guys on the ice, and the rest of us look at it and go, how is that working? How, I don't understand how you came to that decision and you just issue a statement, then you're just trading the one controversy for another. And so for me, if you want to, as a supervisor of officials, and this is what I think the NHL should do, is have that transparency, step out and say, this is why we thought the call was this. And then that's it. It's over with. But you're right. Hell would freeze over before that ever happens.
And you know why? Because I'm going back to the late 1990s when Brett Hull's toe was in the crease on the Stanley Cup winning goal. And they gave an explanation. Brian Lewis at the time out and met with the media. And he was the supervisor of officials at the time. But then he got criticized and turned around for what he said. So the problem is that it's just, you say one controversy starts another. That would start another one too.
Yeah, but like Brian Lewis was not your best spokesman to get up there at the time. Hard to do right at the end of the game without, and the biggest goal for the Dallas Stars in their history. But they had called that all year long, toe in the crease, which was a terrible rule. It was a terrible rule.
Awful.
And it was, I still maintain that goal was one of the best things that happened in the National Hockey League because they realized this is a lousy rule. We got to get rid of it. So,
well, of course, and you know, I'm thinking of Jim Ralph's routine of Bobby Orr's goal saying, hold on a second, Bobby Orr, we got to call this back. You have to look at video replay because somebody might have been in the crease. Well,
exactly.
It's great comedy, but it's also an absolute fact that you don't want that to happen. And
yeah.
And basically the reason why I think they allowed that goal and didn't call it back, even though that goal that was scored by Brett Hull should have been called back by the way that they had been interpreting it all year, was because they had opened the doors and the media was on the ice and the Stanley, they were celebrating the Stanley Cup. So they said, well, we're not going to change that.
Yeah, what are we going to do? We're going to go to video. We're going to say no, 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 no goal.
Everybody off the ice, and now we got to scrape the ice to get the
people's
foot marks off of it and everything. I don't know. Yeah. But Don Sweeney also was talking about the other thing that happened in this series, and that, of course, is the hit that Bennett had, public enemy number one, against Marchand the game before.
That's, you know, Department of Player Safety needs to, you know, make the statement on how they interpret that situation. You know, we've seen every angle that you can possibly imagine. No different than, you know, when Brad himself has been called to the carpet and you know, comparables are looked at. That's their job, their responsibility to protect the players, and we have to respect that, whatever their judgment is. And it's not a source of frustration on our part. Our guys played, you know, well last night. We had a 2-0 lead. They clawed their way back into the game, and you know, we didn't get it done. It's no different than how Toronto felt down 3-1 to us and how we felt last year. You know, the fact that they gain momentum, you just have to go down and win a hockey game. Go out, execute the way we're capable, and we'll be fine.
Again, it's unusual for a general manager to be meeting with the media like this, but I guess the situation warranted it. And then, of course, the subject of being outshot badly by Florida came up, and Sweeney did a rather masterful job of deflection.
Yeah, we're not a volume shooting team. You know, we're trying to get quality. I mean, in a perfect world, you get both quality and quantity. You know, we have three breakaways last night. You can extend the lead. They had two. So there were some chances, probably a little more than earlier call game, you know, even game two for that matter. We're in a 2-1 hockey game. You know, we don't execute at the end of a period to get in there, and they take momentum. So playoff hockey, you know, in that sense. We definitely need to do a better job of recognizing some offensive situations and remaining tight defensively, staying above and playing behind. Creating as much traffic as possible. You know, we haven't had a lot of rebound opportunities in this series, and I think we need to generate a little bit more of that with the intent of going to the harder areas of the ice. And you know, our defense has to be a little more active to be able to get pucks through and change their lanes, give the other team credit for blocking shots, and just ultimately do a better job. You know? We're behind in the series because they've executed in some of those situations better than we have.
But here's the concern, Drew, as we get to game number 5 in Florida. Florida leading the series 3-1. They can wrap it up at home. This has nothing to do with this team. This has nothing to do with this season, but it just is interesting to note that in the entire history of the Boston Bruins, they have a lifetime record of 0-25 when trailing a series 3-1. And you add in the 0-15 mark when they trailed 3-0. But it's weird because if they trail 3-2, they've come back 4 times out of 27. They're 4-23. That's only even if they win in game number 5. So Boston's in trouble.
Boston's in big trouble. Now, I do believe Florida's the better team. They have played better. They've executed better. They've been able to figure out Jeremy Swayman after game 1. Their forecheck is relentless. They've been physical way more than the Boston Bruins. They are always on the hunt. And they are getting to the net. They're doing a lot of things right. They're a very well stacked team, a team that's got depth, and a team that's very well coached. I believe they'll win this series. I think they'll win it tonight as we're recording on Tuesday. I think they'll win this. They've got all the momentum. And with Brad Marchand out, that's a big, big loss.
And for another reason, too, because they're not depending on just Tkachuk and Barkov to get the points. And they've got a little bit more depth. And that's what Paul Maurice talked about today.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're a little bit deeper this year. And Matthews' game is kind of, he hasn't necessarily needed it to be, right? And it's, he kind of comes in more of a save the day kind of guy. You know, when you really need it, he'll find that way to get that goal late. It's been, for us, okay, I think we do have our game spread out across our four lines right now pretty well. And I don't know that, you know, we had some injuries last year, kind of kept us from ever being able to get to that.
And you know what else they've got through? They've got Bobrovsky, if that doesn't work.
Well, you heard Don Sweeney talk about it. 3 breakaways he's able to stop. And he's been tremendous. He's there when they need him.
Well, that's the story. Game number 5. And of course, the other game is going to be Vancouver versus Edmonton. And oh boy, we've got something going there. With Edmonton Oilers, Connor McDavid getting cross-checked a couple of times. We've got a suspension for Susie. We've got a fine for another player. And McDavid, by the way, meeting with the media, just was asked if he's a little sore these days.
feel great. No. Yeah. I mean, it's a tough game. It's a tough game. They got big D-men that, like I said, they make it hard on you. They play physical. They play they play a physical brand of hockey, and it's fun to be a part of. It's a fun series to be a part of. Obviously, you know, two Canadian teams going at it. A lot of passion. Yeah, you know, that's part of it.
And Vancouver up in that series, they've been a nice surprise in the playoffs, to be honest. I thought that my view of it is that they were going to have a learning experience this year, but they're showing they're more prepared than that.
They are. I think Rick Tocchet has done a wonderful job, but they are getting contributions from pretty much everybody. Even Rick Tocchet puts in last game a couple of kids that have only played one or two games this year, and they make a contribution defensively on the penalty kill. They're using their third string goaltender in Seeloff. Okay, Danny, Seeloff, Seeloff, Seeloff. There's 800 pronunciations. You are the pronunciation expert when it comes to especially Russian names. What is his last name?
Well, it's a Latvian name, first of all.
Is he Arturs?
I think it's Arturs Seeloffs.
Seeloffs.
Yes, right. That's what I believe it is.
Yeah.
But hey, it's almost like an SH. It's like Ozilinch.
Yeah.
Seeloffs.
Yeah.
That's okay. Kind of what it really is. But all I can tell you is that this goaltender is making great saves like this one.
Number 29 for the Oilers has the puck, and he'll skate it right wing to the Vancouver line. He's tripped up into the zone by Hugh Suter. And this is going to be a power play for the Oilers. They've still got the puck. Ekholm far side. What a save by Seeloffs on a one-time chance for Evan Bouchard for the left circle. Seeloffs across to his right into the splits. Holds it out to keep this game scoreless.
That was a big, big save by Seeloffs, and that's a great call by Brendan Batchelor of the Vancouver Canucks radio broadcast. He's been like the Archer's Irving of 2024.
Exactly right. He has been much bigger, but he has been tremendous. He only had that one really hiccup game in game two, but you knew that Edmonton was going to come flying back, especially Connor after not getting a shot on net. But he has been tremendous. And the reason, one of the big reasons, they're up 2-1, but the depth of the Canucks is the other.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, one other note, too. Linus Karlsson has made his playoff debut for the Vancouver Canucks. And you may recall that he was drafted by the San Jose Sharks. And he got to Vancouver in a trade that brought Jonathan Dahlin to the Sharks organization. Jonathan played in the National Hockey League, decided to go back to Sweden. But that was kind of a sort of a minor trade that now is starting to bubble up for Vancouver. And this kid, Linus Karlsson, no relation to the other Karlssons that have played for the Sharks, is ready to go. And he did a pretty good job.
He did a very good job and inserted into a situation where he hadn't played a lot this year, but Karlsson in game three played very well. That's the depth I'm talking about. And Rick Tocchet has not been afraid to use these guys and bring them in. He's got confidence in his team. The team has confidence in each other. And last game was very exciting game, but at the end, that was where the end happened. And then all, you know, what broke loose. And I'm looking forward to see what the response will be from the Edmonton Oilers.
It should be pretty fascinating.
Well, when you look at this series, the one thing that's been really interesting is that even though Edmonton's a deeper team than they have been in the past, they're still not getting performance and production from their depth. It has been, as usual, McDavid, Draisaitl, now Bouchard. Last game, Chris Knobloch did what every coach that's had Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl on their team do, which is put them back together and play them 30 minutes in a game. Chris Knobloch said after last game, he didn't have much of a choice, but also he also stated that I can't keep doing that. We can't win if I got to play those guys 30 minutes and I got to play them together. From Todd McClellan to Ken Hitchcock to Dave Tippett to Jay Woodcroft, to now Chris Knobloch, they all go to that. Everybody says, I'm going to separate those two guys and we're going to have balance. And then when the other guys are just sitting back, go, they'll do it. You have to put them together because you're down and trying to create something. And that's what's happening right now. The depth has not produced for the Oilers.
Moving on to the Dallas series, fascinating one, and this young kid named Wyatt Johnston is front and center.
First power play of the night for for the Avalanche. Coming up on 4.5 to play. And Colorado's really been up against it. They need this man advantage. Turned over to Johnston shorthanded. Here's a shot. Quick save. Rebound. Oh, another save. A score. Second effort. Wyatt Johnston pounding away shorthanded. And even Georgiev couldn't stop that one. 1-0 Dallas.
So that's a shorthanded goal for the 20-year-old who turned 21 at midnight after the game was over. But he had another power play opportunity here.
Down low for Johnston. Backhand shot from Pavelski. And then Girard puts him down a second time for good measure.
No stick for Lehkonen as well up top. Try to isolate him.
Haskinen. They are isolating. Through the shot. Johnston shoots and scores. The 20-year-old has his second of the night. A shorty and a power play goal. And it's 2-0 Dallas.
And when it came down to the end, of course, the Dallas Stars were up by the score of 4-1. The net was empty, and here we go.
Lots of questions to answer post-game tonight for the Colorado Avalanche. This might be one of those, hey, just flush it, right? Empty net. And the goal. Steele gets the goal. I wondered if he thought about giving it back to Wyatt Johnston for the hat trick. And they just had a conversation on the ice. Could have gotten a hat trick in a playoff game hours before he turns 21.
I don't think Wyatt Johnston cares, do you?
No, I don't think so at all. And he has been marvelous. That team, how many times, you know, playing in this year, Danny, did we talk about the depth of that team? Now, Colorado's had a few things now come into him, the Nichushkin situation, and we'll let you explain that just in a minute. That set them back. But the depth of the Dallas Stars has taken over. Even though Joe Pavelski hasn't scored, he's made play after play after play. Jamie Benn has been resurrected. Tyler Seguin has been resurrected. Miro Heiskanen, although he did block a couple shots and was hurt in that game, we'll have to see what happens next game if he's in. Wyatt Johnston, Robertson, Hintz, you can go Marchment. You can go on and on and how good that team is playing right now. And Jake Oettinger, how good is he playing right now?
And the depth of the Dallas Stars is the big difference. Reminds me of the Sharks team from 2016 in a lot of ways. Four lines that keep coming at you.
Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of guys bang up. Roope Hintz also left game four with an upper body injury. So obviously that puts a little pressure on him. That was a Sean Walker cross check to the back. So now you've got that situation playing out with the intensity rising up, with Colorado getting a little desperate and everything else going on. Now, Valeri Nichushkin, really, really a sad story. He has been in the NHL, NHLPA player assistance program, and it's one of the reasons why he moved from one team to the other. Right. Had a bad situation in the playoffs last season against Vancouver. I don't know what it is about stress and substance abuse. It's probably related, but he apparently failed a drug test. That's apparently what happened. And so he has been placed into stage three of the player assistance program. And I can't recall this happening before. It's a 6-month unpaid suspension and obviously total focus on whatever his medical situation is. And obviously he has a chance to come back after that. But if it goes to stage four, then he's going to need commissioner approval to come back. And I think that's a year suspension, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is a year suspension.
So,
yes.
So this is a critical point. And think about it. This guy's got 9 goals.
He leads their team.
To me, this is a devastating blow to the Colorado Avalanche. Their depth is being tested. And, you know, beyond that, you look at the other thing you talked about, Drew, and that is I think Heiskanen, who was selected one pick before Cale Makar, is doing better than Makar is in this series.
He's outplaying him. He's outplaying him without a doubt. Now, you know, it's not a direct matchup, of course, against each other like it would be receiver versus DB in a game. But he has been the better defenseman, the more productive defenseman. Jared Bednar did say some wonderful things about Nichushkin. But the one thing he said, that this is hockey. It's not life or death, even though sometimes we treat it that way. I want Val to get better. I want Val to be able to resume his career, but I want him first and foremost to get better, I'm paraphrasing, and get healthy again. So it was really well said by Jared Bednar after the game. He said, yeah, it hurts our team, but we have to move forward.
When we have our next program, at least one series will probably be over, but there will be some other teams on the brink. And Drew, there's nothing like this.
It's fun, Dan. I love reviewing it with you. I think this is always good and always fun to talk about.
And by the way, our condolences to the family of Bill Friday, great NHL referee. Yes. Who has passed away, was a referee from 1960 to 1972. And we certainly pass along our condolences to his family. Meantime, that Ranger series is going to be fascinating in Carolina. And we've got coverage of that and much, much more coming in our next episode of the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. Until then, so long, everybody.
You've been listening to the Stanley Cup Playoff Report. This has been a presentation of the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.